If you've been thinking about private label, I just want you to hold off a little bit. I've got about 2 weeks, and I'm just giving you a little bit of a tease that I'm going to offer something that I've never offered before. It involves me and my family and my warehouse and possibly your products. And so I think it's worth waiting for. I just ask you to hold out. Give me a little bit of time to put it together, and then I think it's a pretty good offer. So I'll be back with it.
Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 207, Matt Colvin. Matt is a pretty straight guy, just no nonsense, just put it out there, do the work. I think he learned that in the Air Force. I think for certain he is intentional about what he does. We spent some time talking, though, about some challenges and challenges that he went through and overcame. And I always love that we overcome these challenges because everybody has them. I've just been at a bunch of conferences, and one of the common things I hear is, hey, I'm stumbling. Hey, I've tripped up. Guess what? Everybody does. And I think Matt does a great job of walking you through how he get through it. And I just think it's powerful stuff. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. And I'm very excited about today's guest. He is, well, I've seen him a whole bunch of places for the last year. I mean, we've met probably three, four, maybe five times, just in different places. Seems to be everywhere, traveling a lot, investing in himself, which I really, really appreciate. Matt Colvin. Hey, welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stephen.
Well, it's true. You know, you do get the concept of an investment, don't you? I mean, you understand that.
Absolutely. And just the time that you put in to traveling to these conferences, especially, you just talked, we just were at Rocky Mountain a couple of days ago. And coming out of those times, it's the time that you put into improving yourself and your business can't be understated. And other people in that relationship are huge.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, tell me if this is fair, that, and I've said this on stage, you heard me say it on stage, the number one thing you can do for your business is go and meet with like-minded people that can help you advance through the problems that you have or will have, because guess what? Somebody's already had them and has gone through it. Fair?
Absolutely. Because every conference that I've gone to, I've come away from it with at least one person that has become somebody that I talk to on a regular basis and has helped fill me in on all sorts of information about a piece of my business that I hadn't even thought.
And I just interviewed another seller that was there, and he made this statement, and it's such a great statement, that lots of times it's not the sellers that are bigger sellers. A lot of times, a lot of the things that you learn come from newer sellers because they just don't know all the, you know, the environment has changed. So, you know, they just don't know any of the old baggage that we all probably still carry. And so a lot of times, has that been your experience too?
Absolutely. It's some of the smaller sellers, the folks that are coming on, they have such a fresh way of looking at things. And yeah. They may be like, hey, I'm doing this way. And it's not something that I ever would have thought about. That's how I got started doing reboxing my Nikes in a different way when I do that.
It is very refreshing, I think, too, because you see I asked this question on stage, and I don't remember, I asked who is optimistic and who's going to grow their business this year. Did you notice that, well, you probably couldn't because you were down in the thing, I'm on the stage, 100% of the arms went up, 100%. There was nobody who said,
both my
oh, you raised both of your, oh, they see that you, that's why it looked even fuller. That's why it looked like 500 people when it was really like 300, but it's true.
It was really an inspirational moment. Everyone in that room is optimistic that their business is going to grow. And I believe that everyone in that business is going to see growth.
Somebody said they gave them the tingles. That was the spot when I talked that they got the tingles because it was like, huh. The optimism. And I think that that's what you need. You know, if you're around a bunch of negatives, you're going to be negative, right? I mean, you are who you hang with. And so when you're around optimistic people who are thinking nothing but, okay, I'm going to figure this out. You know, yeah, it's a challenge. Oh, they're going to change a rule. Okay, I can change with it, right? I can move myself forward. How do you get moving forward when you get stuck?
When I'm stuck on something, I reach out to a group of people that I trust. I reach out to somebody who may be having the same problem. Right now, I I'm not in a place where I'm stuck on something, but I'm in a place where I'm concerned that I'm working with something that could be a sticking point down the road. And one of the ways that I handle being stuck is trying to recognize ahead of time situations or product lines or something that could get you stuck, and trying to do whatever I can to mitigate that thought process.
So what are you basically like playing it out? Okay, if this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens and this happens, this could happen. I mean, is that how you do it in your mind?
Correct. Yeah, it goes back to some anxiety that I've had in the past. I tend to look for the worst in a situation in a lot of times. But I've actually been able to turn that into somewhat of a positive in my business world, because I can more fluidly look over a situation and say, okay, these are the possible problems, and this is how I'm going to work around those problems or mitigate them if and when they do ever happen.
So it's like a B and a C plan by SKU or by category?
Primarily by category or brand.
Oh, okay.
Like right now, most of quite a bit of my sales are in Nike.
Okay.
And Nike and Amazon have a love-hate relationship, and or a hate-hate relationship might be more accurate. And so that leaves room for me to grow, operate and profit. But if tomorrow Amazon and Nike got together and decided to get really gung-ho on the brand registry, or Nike and Amazon signed some sort of a blockbuster deal for Nike to start selling on Amazon, my business would take quite a hit.
So you have a B plan for that?
Yes, I do. I'm diversifying into other brands. I don't like the fact that I'm as heavy in one brand as I am right now. But I've also, for example, at the Rocky Mountain Reseller Conference, the evening before it started, I was down in the lobby lobby networking, and Peter Kern, I believe it was.
Smart dude, man. That dude's smart.
Yes, he is. And he and I spent some time talking about inauthentic and copyright and trademark, and he helped me see things from Amazon's perspective. Too many people get emotional about I bought it, it's real, so I should be able to sell it.
Right.
And I do believe that.
They know me. Jeff Bezos knows me. I've been there for a long time.
But at the same time, I realize that we're also playing in Amazon's sandbox, and they can change the rules however they want to at any time. So getting some feedback from him on what I could expect, basically what I got from him was, the longer that Amazon and Nike don't get along, the better it is going to be for my business.
Right.
And right now, diversification is probably the smartest option for me.
Right. Yeah. And so, you let it wind down, but you still stay in it, you know, keep a little bit. Peter's one of the really smart.
I'm not going to let it wind down. I'm going to add other things to it.
Oh, okay. So you could supplement.
It's lucrative to let wind down. I'm not moving away from them by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. But you're just going to add other things. Correct. In addition. So you're just going to grow flat out.
Yeah, that's,
okay.
That's it.
That's not a bad plan. You know, Peter's whole strategy is basically you have to have a plan for your ASIN, right? So ASIN level plan. And so that's probably what he's working your way through. You're doing it at a brand level, but, you know, it really is, I'm assuming, pretty similar, you know, across those similar brand ASINs, right? That kind of makes sense, you know, one plan. So I think that that's very smart. Have you thought about where you're going today? I mean, when you sit there and you say you're going to grow, you're going to expand in some other things and that, you're still a heavy RA seller, correct?
Correct.
Have you thought about where you're going? Are you thinking the wholesale route, the private label route, the bundle route? Have you thought about any of that stuff? You don't have to commit to it. It's a pretty stupid question. Of course you've thought about it. Which one are you leaning towards? I guess that's a better question.
I'm leaning towards wholesale out of all of those.
Okay.
Pardon me.
What's attractive to you for that?
What's attractive to me for wholesale is being able to place one order and get 1,000 units of something coming to me, even if it's at a lower margin than what I'm looking at. 1,000 units of one item would take a week or two, even in a good situation where every store had one if I was out doing RA.
Right.
So the fact that I can actually replenish the items without having to put tons of miles on my truck and driving around and my time, that's kind of what I'm looking looking at.
You know, one of the real strengths you have is you're very likable. You're very good at communication. So I'm assuming that you will do very well in that world, developing relationships. You're very comfortable talking to people. And I could see you at a trade show getting, you know, just doing gangbusters and developing those relationships. And ultimately, that's what has to happen. If you don't develop the relationship, you know what's going to happen. 68 other Amazon sellers are going to get to that wholesaler and say, hey, I can solve your problems. I'm that guy.
And see, the thing that's actually attractive to me about private label is that I don't have to be that guy.
Right.
You've seen me in person, which is my element. I'm very much in my element in person. I like to talk to people. I like to talk too much a lot of the time.
I won't let you.
good for you. Somebody has to keep me in check. But talking to people over the phone is normally something that I really have a problem with. And so working to build those wholesale relationships and stuff like that outside of the trade show environment has proven to be quite challenging for me mentally.
So what do you plan on doing then?
Well, right now I'm planning on avoiding it by doing as much RA as possible, because what I'm doing right now, I don't believe I've scaled to the point where I can't scale it anymore. I believe I've got a lot more room for growth. And one of the biggest things that I've been doing with the RA side of the house is I've been trying to get away from packing and taping boxes myself. And I actually closed a deal today with a local prep center. Who will handle my retail arbitrage stuff. I'm going to be able to start dropping it off, and they'll have it out in 24 to 48 hours.
Did you meet them at the Rocky Mountain Conference?
Yes, sir.
Now, hold on. Now, this is a big moment.
I know.
So you went for an investment to learn to get better, and you met someone there who can do your prep.
Absolutely.
You just hired a giant team. You just expanded your business by investing in a and I take some heat because people are like, you preach all these conferences, you're getting paid. I'm not getting paid a dime. I don't get paid from anybody. I sold all those tickets for Paul and Travis because I believe in what they're doing, period. I get paid nothing, right?
Absolutely.
Because I know, what did I say? That your life can change at that place right there.
It absolutely can, and it did for me. I mean, the gentleman sat next to me on the brew bus. That's how I met him.
Oh, come on. You got him drunk, didn't you? You got him drunk. No, come on, fess up.
This was before alcohol. This was at the hotel.
I'm on to your game. You get him drunk, and you get to make a deal, and the guy probably doesn't remember it.
I may or may not have pumped some secrets out of a few people while they'd had a few, but no, I didn't actually.
I'm not much of a beer drinker, so that's not a great environment for me, but I get the camaraderie there because, you know, the thing that you realize is they have kids too, right? And they have a life, and when you can have that conversation, it really takes away the internet muscles, doesn't they? It kind of strips down the, hey, my sales are bigger than your sales, Matt. You know, it's a male envy thing. And it really strips down, and then you're just a regular guy having a beer with someone, right? And it changes the relationship. Has that been your experience?
Absolutely. It's like one of my best friends in the FBA world. If you know him from online, then you probably think he's a little bit of a jerk. But if you know him in person, you realize that he is not that way. It's just how he comes across online. And you just did the interview with him. It went live a few days ago. That's my friend Tyler Nelson.
Yeah, you can't get the emotion through typing on a computer. You can't.
It takes so much out of what people are saying, and it's so easy to misconstrue what's being said that until you meet someone in person, I encourage everybody to keep an open mind about that person, because someone that you don't think you're going to get along with may end up being a great partner for you.
Well, I think the world of Tyler, and, you know, I love his story. And if you don't know it, go back and listen to it, because, you know, here's a kid who's going to college for business, selling a cup. Oh, he's still in high school, just about. He's selling $300,000 or $400,000. And he goes into business class and they're teaching him old business stuff, probably stuff that I learned. And he's like, this isn't the business that I see every day. What is this? And realizes that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of that stuff hasn't changed. And, you know, there's a vested interest in not changing it, right? Because it's expensive to change. So they're just going to keep selling it. And it's unfortunate. You know, that stuff applies if you're running General Motors or GE. That doesn't apply when you're running as an entrepreneur your own business. Fair?
Yeah, I would absolutely say that's fair. The business environment and the e-commerce environment, the commerce environment in general, has been changing at breakneck speeds the past several years. And I don't really think that academics is able to even keep up. Most people aren't even able to keep up.
I think
up.
That's
companies,
a great statement.
Companies aren't able to pick up.
I think the
up.
Fact that you corrected it and said it to commerce in general, that's a great, yeah. That's a really big observation. You're right. I saw John
There's
Lawson
so
posted today, 5,000. Did you see that, John Lawson? I knew it was 4,000 because I've been quoting that stat. He said we're already up to 5,000 now. I mean, that's only 3 weeks. My data was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was 4,000, and now it's over 5,000.
Yep.
How does an academic keep up? You're right. I mean, how do they keep up with it? Because that's completely changed. And as I said in another interview, think of those retail locations. That affects all those employees, of course, the guy who owns the business or lady who owns the business. The person that they rented from, that affects their business, right? And the cleaning company that's in there cleaning the mall or wherever, right? Right. The garbage company that picks up the garbage cans. It's the trucking company. It's the UPS that delivers packages, right? They get affected. It's the trucking company bringing stuff from the warehouse. It's the warehouse itself. It's the manufacturer. It's all those things are impacted. It's the restaurants around that store, right? We've all been to malls where the restaurants close because the anchor stores close, right?
Yep.
These are ripple effects. And I agree with you. That is not being taught in school. I shouldn't say that. I have not seen it being taught in school, and I'm sure there are some schools that are on it. But generally speaking, Tyler's experience, it wasn't. Fair?
Yeah. Yep, I would agree with that. And I've not got any college under my belt other than what I got while I was in the military.
Yeah, well, I don't want to, you don't downplay that. I mean, you were in the Air Force. I mean, it's a big deal. To me, that's better than any education that I've ever been through. So you've been overseas many, many times. You've done your service to your country, and I applaud you for that. That is a big deal, dude. Don't downplay it.
Oh. It's in my nature too. I don't like talking. I don't. It's in my nature to downplay it because I don't feel like I did that much. But,
well, you didn't do that much unless something happened, and then you would have done that much, right? I mean, so correct. You know, you put yourself in harm's way while I was sitting here, probably eating ice cream on my couch, right? And so, unfortunately, that's probably true too. So, all right, let's do this. I want to take a break and I want to come back and I want to go back into your story because I jumped a little bit ahead, but it is fair because we did just come back from that conference and I think it's fresh and I'm hopeful that more people think about going to them. The next one that I'm going to, now there are a bunch of them coming up. Midwest Ecom. I'm not familiar with it. I know I saw one that's going to be in Seattle. They changed the name. I think it's called the Sellers Conference or something like that. It used to be SCOE. They've changed the name to something else. And then the one that I'm going to be at and I'm going to speak at is Ecom Chicago. And that's in October in Chicago. It's a great, great conference. I've been there a couple of years ago, and I'm really looking forward to it this time. And this time I'm actually going to speak, and I have, a really strong message to give. And so I hope people really think about, when you hear Matt talk about this, this is flat out real. I mean, he's not pulling punches to help someone. It's the truth. If you go there and you put out yourself, and right, I mean, that's part of it too, Matt. You're vulnerable there, right? Talking to
correct.
Peter, you're not telling him, hey, my life is great, I'm the man, you should listen to me. You're saying, hey, you know, here's my situation, right? Well, you're vulnerable there, aren't you?
Right, yeah. And it's one of those things, it's like I know that being vulnerable by bringing it up is one thing, but I knew that he was the person that I could bring it up to and be able to get some good feedback on it. Because he's been on the other side of that equation, and right. That's not a point of view that you get access to very often. So I wanted to make sure I took a full advantage of that and get his idea, get his thoughts on the situation.
Was that hard for you to do as a guy?
Not really.
Okay.
I like talking with people, and it's one of those things. He and I started talking, and I'm like, "Where have I seen you before?" And I had just listened to his interview that he did with you.
Yeah.
And I saw him at Resonate. So we met at Resonate very, very much in passing. And once we realized we had the connection from a prior conference, it actually sped the conversation along. It's one of those things. You get to know people, you get to know their faces, even if you don't spend a lot of time with them. Going to these conferences, it builds a relationship.
I think the
and
world of him.
Seen him before and having heard his interview with you, I used your interview as the segue with him as the segue to ask him my questions about my inventory.
That's
And like you
awesome.
said this during the interview, you mentioned talking about, you were talking about this as a risk. What do you see as the risk in my account with my current business strategy? And I laid it out to him.
Now, there's a big opportunity, right? So Peter, you know, former Amazon guy, big business, big consulting business, charges a ton of money for consulting and earns it. I mean, don't get me wrong, he earns it. And yet you sat down with him and just had a great conversation because he's a great guy. I mean, him and I hit it off immediately. The minute I saw him, we hit it off immediately because I just love his spirit. I think he's got that giving spirit too. He's got a business and he's got to support his family. However, he wants you to be successful, period.
Absolutely.
Love it. Okay. All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that. That valuable service, she's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. I had two guys, two well-known guys in the area reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code MOMENTUM. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Man, are you willing to be as vulnerable as Matt is and talk about yourself that way? I don't think so, but that's why Matt is who he is, right? He wants to help people. He wants to help people move forward. He's been there and wants to help you get past it. So, you know, I have his contact information out on the site, and he gives it in the episode. But I definitely think you should follow up. If you're stuck, if you're challenged, one of the awesome things that happens after every single episode, I talk to people, and they're like, oh, a bunch of people reached out to me. That's what you need to do. If you connect with Matt, connect with Matt. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that because everybody has challenges. And when you can overcome them like Matt has and have much success as he is, he's killing it. It's an awesome thing. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Matt Colvin. And Matt, I want to go back though, Matt. But I did jump ahead, as I said, and I made my pitch again about the conferences. That's probably the second time this thing, and sorry about that, everyone. But it's true. I mean, I just don't know of anything else that when I talk to the top sellers, it is absolutely the thing. Their partnerships and networking are the things that they've had the most the biggest growth in their business. Now you have some partners and you have a mastermind group you're part of, right?
Correct. Yes.
And that's been, I remember you telling me one of these times we were together, how important that was for you and how important that group of people has become for you.
Absolutely. We're a big family. There's 15 of us in the group. 10
that's
of
a
us
big one. Like, 15 is big.
It's a big one, but everybody's rock stars in it. We had 15 people here at, we have 15 people in the group, 10 were at Rocky Mountain. We actually went out at dinner Thursday night, and that was the first time we've had a quorum together, but call ourselves the Ninja Consortium.
That's a big deal though, 10 of 15.
Yes.
That's a lot. That's a commitment.
Faces with names. It was great. I mean, Adam Black is the one who put it together.
Smart dude. Another smart
yes,
dude.
He is.
I really like him.
Yes, yes, Adam. You need to get him on here.
Oh, he's coming up. He's coming up. He's in my pipeline. And every time I talk with him, I'm always like, oh man, there's another angle to this guy. Every time I find out more, I'm like, are you kidding me?
I mean, every time I talk to him on the phone, he throws another curveball at me. That's something I never would have ever even thought of.
And here's the other thing: a very good heart. You know, and that's what I look for in people. I'm attracted to people like that because they just. They just throw off a great vibe, and I love it. No false pretenses there, and I always appreciate that. So how did you get into selling, Matt? Were you selling while you were in the Air Force?
No, I was, well, not on Amazon, but I did do some e-commerce stuff while I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
I was in the Air Force for 10 and a half years. I got out in 2013 and went in 2003, and I used to have a business selling digital game items online. I sold game items for a game called Diablo 2,
Yeah, I
which
was gonna
was
say,
really
what is, give me an example.
yeah. For example, like a level 27 battle axe and stuff like that. Stuff that only the super nerds inside the game even cared about because it was a digital item inside the game. And that was one of my first big e-commerce adventures. I did all that on eBay, and then it all came crashing down on me because Blizzard Entertainment, who owns the game, started filing the Vero claims and saying that we were selling their intellectual property, which looking back on it, yeah, that was perfectly true. But for a while there, I made more money on that in the Air Force than I was making in the Air Force. And that was my first real big, huge success in doing e-commerce type stuff. But it was digital items, not actual hard items.
When you moved into physical items, did you try eBay first, or did you go right into Amazon?
I went right into Amazon. This is going to sound horrible, but I have no idea who got me started on Amazon. I was reading some make monies online type of blog and stumbled across somebody talking about FBA. And the thing that I liked about that was at the time I was still a contractor. After my time in the Air Force and I was done, they medically retired me. And I went on to teach at a schoolhouse where I taught radar networking theory and things along those lines. And while I was there, I was still busy, I was still traveling. So hearing about FBA, one of the reasons why I didn't want to get into eBay was you sell something and you have to ship it the same or the next day. With FBA, that took and lowered the barrier to entry as far as I was concerned. It gave me a platform along the lines of Amazon, aka billions of eyeballs and of buyers, and it gave me the ability to be able to send a shipment in and that shipment end up in 50, 100 different people's homes. And the fees were not some were more than on eBay, but the convenience is where it was. And being able to continue my day job and continue to be a husband and all that was very important to me. And that's why I got started with FBA.
And so you actually went through that math in your head, time value, time value, time value, before you really got started.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. Looking back, do you think you made the right decision?
Getting into FBA?
Yeah, I mean, I know this is going to be a stupid thing, but go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely made the right decision. I mean, the way my life has changed since I got started with Amazon is absolutely phenomenal. And it's not something that's been all sunshine and roses. I mean, everyone talks about the huge winners they had, and then there's the losers that nobody likes to talk about because it's too painful. But that was one of the questions that was asked of the panel at Rocky Mountain. And everyone has their losers. Nobody likes to talk about their losers. They just like to talk about their success.
We all have it, and there's nobody, everybody has to. Well, I mean, it's tuition, isn't it? I mean, it really is. I remember Matt Kelly telling me this, though. He's like, look, Steve, this is the only business that I've seen where if you buy it right, the worst case scenario is you write it down to break even. And I think he's pretty accurate on that. If you're careful, you can, as long as you keep that, whatever metrics you use, and you're, logical with the rank and all the rest of that kind of jazz, he's probably correct. When you look at Keepa and you see the price never goes below X, if it's X plus fees and it sells at that price, you're at break even, right? And so,
Absolutely.
that's a pretty smart way to do it. And that should be the parameter you should use. Now, you won't, the risk, right? Are you a risk guy or not?
I am becoming more of a risk guy. I took some silly risks early on, when I didn't really understand what I was doing, which really tempered my risk. I have a higher risk tolerance now than I used to. Because I've also seen the upside, but it also comes down to knowing the category that you're in, knowing what you're selling and whether it's worth taking the risk on something that say has a higher rank and hoping. And it's not just hope buying something at a high, say you've got something at a really high rank in clothing, but it hasn't been in stock for a while and you're pretty sure it's going to sell at that price. That's one thing. But taking the risk, knowing that, hey, I've sold this exact shoe before. And I know that as soon as the five that I bought got to the warehouse, they all sold and the sales rank never moved. That's one of the things. I'll take small risks. What I like to do is take small risks to validate whether the risks were correct or not. And if it was a good risk to take, then I either go back and try and get more, which I can't always, or I file it away for future reference.
Well, that's a good question. How do you know, right? I mean, so, you know, I don't want to stay on your brand. Let's just pick something else. Craftsman Tools, right? You've sold Craftsman wrenches. So is that the frame of reference you use when you go in? You know that the, this is really going to be stupid, the 8-inch vice grip pliers of Craftsman. I mean, it's a bad name because vice grip's its own name, whatever. You just know that that's one, and you just buy them as long as the price, right, the strike price, right, you know that they're going to sell for $29.99 and you want to buy them no more than $18, say. And so wherever you go, when you see them at that, you just scoop them up in my example, and I would liken it to your other brands. Do you get where I'm going?
Yes, I do. It's one of those things. We all look at the charts. Everybody's got the Keepa chart, and we all live and die by the Keepa chart or the camel, and stuff like that. But there's no greater metric than having sold something and starting to get a feel for how it sells. I can walk I've gotten to the point with some different areas of my business, like I buy and sell bras, and I've gotten to the point now where I can go through a bra section and I only scan about a third of the bras on the rack. Sometimes even less than that, because I know what brands I actually can sell on Amazon and which ones are just going to sit there and not move, regardless of what the numbers say.
And so you just know. You just know. Experience.
There's no real I don't have a real quantifiable system where I'm poring over spreadsheets or anything along those lines. It's just I've learned certain brands and I know certain lines of certain brands are going to sell. A really bad example would be Hatchimals. Everybody knows that Hatchimals are going to sell, but if you didn't know that, let's say you didn't have sales rank to guide you, and you were a hermit and hadn't heard anything about Hatchimals, but you saw one and you could sell it, and so you did, and it sold within 5 minutes when it got there. Okay. Well, then the next time you go out, you're going to try and buy two of them. Mm-hmm. And the next time after that, if they both sell, you're going to try and buy four of them. And it just builds from there. Learning the brands that you're selling. One of the things I like that Peter Kearns in the talk that he gave, talking about which inventory items you want to have, you want to keep the head, the torso, and the tail.
Right, right.
That's very similar to what someone taught me when I was first getting selling. And they said, hey, Matt, this is what you want. You want a bunch of fast nickels, slow dimes, and super slow quarters. You want a good mix of inventory that's going to make you, the nickels are the ones that are going to make you a decent amount of profit and they're going to flip fast. The dimes are going to make you a solid amount of profit and they're going to flip relatively fast. The quarters are those long tail, the ones that are going to take a while to sell, but it's worth waiting on it because you may get an 8x return or something like that.
Yeah, significant, right? I mean, that's probably where your real profits are made. Now, are you investing your money back into the business at this point? Are you trying just to grow it that way organically, or you have a different plan?
Most of the money is going back into the business, almost exclusively since I started the business. My money has gone back into the business and just rolled it over.
Good for you.
I started with $150 worth of Walmart clearance toys in January of 2015. And obviously, I haven't rolled that $150 into what I have right now, but I have grown exponentially since then. And what I've been doing is I've leveraged credit to get where I'm at, but we have started taking money out of the business. And that's something I struggled with early on. My wife and I she was skeptical to say the least when I first got started selling on Amazon. And her thing was, well, you can do this, but only with your money. I don't want to use family money for this. It doesn't make sense to me. So what I did was I was doing it with my own money. When it came time to talk about pulling money out, it was my pocket money. At least that's the way that my silly little newlywed brain was working. And that kind of came crashing down on me when I left my job in North Carolina. I was in a place where I didn't voluntarily leave my job in North Carolina. My doctors made me quit.
Okay.
It was, I was going through a really rough time when I was working as a teacher. I'm not the best in front of a huge group of people.
Okay.
And there were roles there that I feel like I would have very much excelled in. And then there was the role they put me in, which seemed like trying to put a square peg in a round hole.
Is that where that anxiety comes from?
Yeah, a
Or
lot
it
of it
shows
was,
itself?
yeah, that's a lot of what was going on. But I was at the time seeing military doctors, and I was severely over-medicated. I was taking 6 to 8 Percocet a day, and morphine at night, plus all of my anxiety medications. It was a wonder that I was able to walk around standing and drive, and let alone get in front of 40 people and talk to them about radar networking type stuff. It got to the point where my doctors told me that I needed to step away from working with the military, or I'd end up harming myself. And in that moment, that time period when my sick leave ran out and things along those lines, that's when it hit me. Well, holy crap, I can't just be selfish about this. My wife was working two jobs, and here I am sitting at home because I can't work. And I have an Amazon business that's bringing in a decent amount of money, but I had been operating it kind of as its own thing. And my wife landed a job out here in Denver, where we're located now, with Kaiser Permanente, the company that it's a big, huge healthcare company that she used
Massive.
for. And everything kind of came to a head when we were in the midst of moving out here, when I was still reluctant to take business money and put it into the family thing. And she's like, "Hey, look, we can't afford to move without the business chipping in." And that hit me really hard. And we made the move. We got out here to Colorado, and we were living on credit cards for a while there. My wife has a great job, but it's expensive to live here. And I was still trying to get my head on straight. The doctors out here have gotten me on medications that I'm down to taking just Tylenol 3 every now and then for my back. And I've dropped almost 70 pounds since I moved here 2 years
Told me
ago.
that. That shocks me.
It's crazy how much better off I am now that I had doctors that actually took the time to get to know me and my issue and try and find non-narcotic and non-sedating solutions. Getting off of that medication is hands down the best thing that has happened to me in the past decade, with the exception of marrying my wife and my daughter, who's on the
Who's on the way, and that
way.
is a that's another big life moment.
Oh my
What
God,
are you
no.
thinking about? I mean, you're in a position now that you can help with that. Is that part of it now? Is that going to be part of your why? I mean, what's
Oh
your
my God, it is my why. One of my goals this year is, my wife has, I think it's something like 6 or 8 weeks of maternity leave, and she gets paid half during that time, or something along those lines, after she uses up her sick time. And my goal is for her to not have to go back to work. And I believe that I have that in my sights as we speak. And I have a few more months to get there, to where I can feel comfortable saying, "Hey, don't go back to work. Stay home. Help me put stickers on stuff, and be with the baby, and me here at home."
Now, have you had that conversation with her?
Absolutely, yes. It's something that we're both using as motivation, and it's something that she wants to do. And I would call my daughter, who's on the way, the single most motivating thing that has ever happened to me in my entire life.
That's a big statement, dude.
I have stepped my game up several notches since I found out that my wife was pregnant. And it's I almost in sorry, in April, I almost doubled my March. Almost doubled my March in April.
So rather than ask the obvious question, hey, what did you do to double your business? I want to ask you, what did you stop doing that allowed you to double your business? Because my bet is that's probably part of it, isn't it?
That's a really good question, Stephen.
I mean, so for example, one of the things that I ran into out in Denver were a couple guys saying, you know, OA has really become a real problem for me. I can't get my packages. It's become this, the orders and this and that. And they're like looking for permission to stop. And I'm like, guys, then just stop. I mean, if you don't want to do it, if you don't enjoy it and you enjoy this other and you see such a big opportunity, then do it because you love it, you know? And it was like that thing. So they actually are going to stop their OA because it's just not adding enough value. Right. So that's the kind of thing I'm looking for. Was there something that you stopped doing that allowed you to have the time to go and do more of this?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
One of the things that I stopped doing was I stopped packing all the boxes myself.
Okay. All right.
I stepped out. I've had day labor come in and be like, hey, okay, put labels on those 200 items over there, or take a heat gun and take labels off those 100 items over there. Hand me these boxes so I can put them in the box. This has all been like independent contractor type stuff. Somebody who comes in and works a couple of days with me, and then they go off and do something else. One of the reasons why I'm as excited about the prep center as I am is that I am now 0-for-3 when it comes to moving someone who's worked for me on occasion into a more regular role. Every single time that I've had somebody set up like that, they've ghosted on me. They disappeared the minute that I start talking about tax forms and payroll and all that fun stuff. I would not have been able to scale my business to the point that I have over the past couple months without outside help with prep. That was one of the biggest things that I found. Also this year, especially over the past couple months, when I've grown things, I stopped relying on one sale to make my brand. That's not right. I stopped relying on one sale that happens at a particular store that I go to as my only time that I sourced that store. I'm in that store every weekend now, and they have a sale every weekend, and it's something different every weekend, but most weekends it's profitable. So it's worth me going out and going after it hard, getting what I need and going from there.
Is your time shorter there for now because you know it so well?
Yes and no. It depends because, for example, I've gone into a Nike outlet in the past and spent 2 hours in there and come out with like 60 pairs of shoes. I've also spent 7 hours in a Stride Rite that was closing buying 300 pairs of shoes.
Right, right.
And I don't think that my time is necessarily shorter in the stores because I'm very much a... The best advice I can give to anyone who's getting started is just scan everything. You will start. That's how you learn your brands. That's how you learn to be able to eyeball things when you're walking through, like the bra example I used earlier. But when I go into a store now, I go in with a plan and a purpose, and I want to get at least a couple hundred pairs of shoes a weekend is where I'm at right now. Does that answer your question?
I think it does. Well, because at first I was thinking it was a bad question because you didn't have anything that you stopped doing, and then you came up with two or three good things that you stopped. And I think that that's the key. I mean, I think you know what to do. It's just, you know, I say this, Mike Ross's interview is coming up, and he talks about small piles of money everywhere. We have this set of eyes. We see value everywhere. Literally, everywhere I go, I see small piles of money. He's right when he says it. There's opportunity everywhere. We have that eye about us, and that's the negative sometimes, is we have that eye about us because it makes us want to do everything, right? It's so attractive.
It's true.
And, you know, so it's good to pull back and not do everything, and that's hard to do. But that's a maturity. There's a maturity going on in your business that you're able to do that, Matt. And that's a big deal. I think that's why you're having so much success.
Very possibly. I hope that that's the reason, and I hope it keeps going moving forward.
Well, I think you're making a lot of the right choices too, right? And you're asking questions. I mean, the fact that you're willing to put yourself out there to a Peter Kearns is a big deal. To me, that's an opportunity. You're asking, I mean, you know Wallflower when you go to these conferences. You are right out in front asking lots of questions. I saw you at Resonate asking lots of, matter of fact, you were in the front row when I was speaking. And you were asking questions and making sure you left with the real understanding. And quite frankly, as a speaker, I want you to have the understanding. I'm so worried about my context to make sure that you get what I'm trying to say. And so that's very helpful. And again, that's not a wallflower, right? You're putting yourself out there and saying, hey, I'm going to ask a question. It might be a stupid question, but I'm going to take the chance. And then boom, others you'll find out have the same question and they just were afraid to say it. Do you think, when you think about your biggest strength, what would you say it is?
My biggest strength, I think, comes in areas like process improvement. My dad worked in he used to time how long it took people to stuff a chair back or make a
time liner. Study. Oh, I've done them.
Time study. Oh, you know.
Oh my God, I'm an accountant by trade. So guess what? I had to do all that jazz. That was murder. Yep. I hated it.
Yep. So my dad did that for several years, and then he became they moved him into what they called process improvement, where he was trying to come up with ways to save Lazy Boy, the chair company, is who he worked for, money, and I have a lot of that in me, I think, because I look at a situation. I've always been that guy who's like, okay, this is dumb. This is stupid. It's taking way too long. How can we do it faster? And then a lot of times I proceed to find myself spending 4 hours to solve a 2-minute problem. But I've gotten better at walking away from it, situations like that, and trying to concentrate on things that actually need improved. Best example I can give of that is I do most of my prep out of my garage, and I got a rolling desk for my prep computer and my prep label and my dymos and everything, my scanner, and I can roll it around the garage to the inventory.
So that's efficient.
And it saves so much time. And it's unbelievable how much more effective it makes me. Things like that, I love finding.
So that's your strength. And so, I'm going to ask what your biggest weakness is. Honest weakness. You got to be honest about it.
Well, yeah. My biggest weakness would probably be the fact that I find myself in a lot of situations sometimes where I'm looking at a product and it's just below the cutoffs that I've set for myself. It doesn't quite meet the rank criteria, or it doesn't quite meet the profit criteria that I have sworn a solemn oath to myself and my bank account that I will not buy anything outside of.
And you do it anyway.
And I do it anyway.
Guilty.
Looking back, I made that decision many, many times when I was first getting started. I'm a lot more disciplined now, but it's still one of my weaknesses.
I think that
sometimes I can convince myself that an item is a quarter in that it's going to bring a big enough return if I wait. When in reality, it's just a high-ranked product that I like, and I would like to buy one of to try and see if I can sell it.
I think, to be fair, I think most of us have that. Somebody asked me what the biggest challenge is, biggest mistakes I've made in my warehouse. I'm like, I've got a whole warehouse full of mistakes that I bought because the price was right. Right? You know, the price was right, beyond right. But you know what? It didn't sell for a reason. You know, I think that's the maturity to get to. You get to a place where it didn't sell for a reason. So why all of a sudden are you magically going to be the guy who figures it out, right?
Yeah. And just to comment on that question again, thinking about it just a hair more, it's probably my biggest weakness is more along the lines of the shiny things that distract me.
Hmm.
I'm working on my inventory, and next thing you know, I'm listening to a podcast while surfing YouTube or Facebook, and it's easy for me to get distracted a lot of times. Mr. ADD over here.
Yeah, I don't know, could that be some of your anxiety back?
Yeah, it's some of it. That's definitely part of it. And it's easy for me to distract myself from a situation that makes me uncomfortable, if that makes sense.
So how do you deal with that now? I mean, have you figured out a way to deal with it? Have you sat down and now?
Not entirely, no.
Okay.
I'm a work in progress, just like all of us.
I get it. But I mean, hey, you recognize it, and so that's a place you can start, and you could start working towards ways to deal with it. I appreciate that you're being honest about it. What else are you struggling with right now? Let me ask it this way. If you were struggling with something, did you find an answer at the conference? Now, we've already talked through two of them. One, the really sound advice from Peter Kearns, giving you some specific category stuff or brand stuff. And then two, finding a prep center to help you. So those two we've already talked about. What other things were you struggling with that you found an answer at the conference, or are you still struggling with?
I'm still struggling with cash flow, but I believe that everyone in this business is probably struggling with cash flow.
For sure.
That would be my next big item that I'm struggling with. I had a situation recently where American Express called me. They're like, "Hey, your accounts are all current. Where you see you're carrying a balance on one of these cards, we'd like you to make an extra payment." Like, well, my payout's not for another few days, so I'm not gonna be able to make an extra payment right now. They're like, "Okay, well, that's fine, but until you make another payment, we're taking away your Amex cards, all of them,
whoa,
including the one that you just paid off for $11,000. And this was when I was in the car on my way to pick up the U-Haul for my Memorial Day Shopapalooza that I had planned. So it's frustrating when that kind of thing happens, but at the end of the day, it's a sign of growth. The fact that I've spent enough to where American Express says, "Hey, we want you to slow down just for a minute," I take that as a positive sign.
I think, you reach a maturity and they're like, "What are you doing?" I saw recently one of the credit card companies canceled someone's credit card and took their points away. And they're like, "Well, you know, no real reason. You know, just, it's going to be gone." And I think that those are some of those things that you got to watch for. And they're completely outside of your control, right? You've done nothing to warrant it. You're not late in any way. It's just that some algorithm somewhere said, "Hey, this guy's history, his accelerated buying, his spending is out of a pattern, and maybe this is something we need to take a look at."
That's also something, though, that I'm really... The whole point of that is I have been pushing the limits with my sales lately.
Okay.
That's my goal. I want to have, by the time Q4 rolls around, I'd like to have somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000 of available credit to me for the fourth quarter. So I'm aggressively spending on specifically my American Express card to try and build a pattern of someone who buys a lot of stuff and pays it off on a regular basis to increase their trust in me.
Well, I think it's a smart move because you have a big goal. I mean, you have a plan. You have a why on the way, correct?
Yes, I do.
Well, you do. I mean, so you want to bring mama home. And so because you want to do that, I think it's very, very smart that you're saying, "Hey, I'm going to be cautious and make sure that I have everything in place." And so I think that that's smart. So when you think about where you're going, right, and we already talked about that, what are the things that are potential things that can hold you back from that? So cash flow being one of the biggest, for sure. What else are you concerned about that can hold you back?
Well, that's a good one. Things that can hold me back are, see, the problem with this question is I see everything as something that could eventually hold me back. That's my negative mindset kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
I see if, say, tomorrow Nike decided they weren't going to allow resellers in their stores anymore. They already don't like us. If they decided tomorrow that they weren't going to allow it anymore, that would be a big hit for me. Being able to continually get inventory on a regular basis outside of just Nike, just in general, it's with an RA business, my concern is that the inventory streams that I pull from could go away at any time or change at any time. Or, for example, you could have a large Amazon sellers conference in your hometown and the whole hometown probably be picked clean by the time everybody leaves town.
Well, you know that just occurred.
Yeah, I was thinking about stopping at Ross on my way home today, and I'm like, you know what? There's probably not even any point. I'll give it like a week.
That's funny.
But knowing the limitations of what I can do myself, and it's... I'm sorry, did I answer your question?
I think like you I'm did. Sure. No, I think you did. I mean, I think you mentioned some things that are outside. I think that's the lesson, right? I mean, I think that's really the thing you have to do is you have to plan for things that are outside of your control. Well, you're going to be like, "Huh, how do I do that, Steve?" Well, I think you have to have, back to Peter's comment, you have to have a plan for ASINs, right? When or if you run into a problem with a particular brand, what would you do with it, right? So you know, you've got to be very cautious when it comes to retail arb. The advice is always go wide, not deep. Now,
correct,
there are really successful multi-million-dollar sellers saying, "But Steve, I go deep," you know, and they have an incredible amount of chutzpah, and they are, that's their nature, but they're gamblers, and they're willing to do it because they know exactly what they want, and they're willing to do it, but they're putting a lot of money at risk, and they have the money to do it. Well, that's a different story, right? But in this scenario, by managing that risk, you can get away from that, right? So you can control the amount of damage. So if something happens, it's not a fatal blow to your business, because that's ultimately what you got to fear, is the fatal blow, right? I mean, you're going to have problems. Everybody has problems.
That's life.
It's the fatal problems, right? The ones that, you know, make it, putting it all on seven, right? Those kind of things. That's the big risk.
Yep. And at the same time, though, you have to be cognizant of the fact that there are some items that you should go deep on. There are some things that if you don't go deep on an item, you're possibly walking away from thousands of dollars worth of profit. I went deep on an item just recently, the deepest I've ever gone, and I'm amazed I still have a Target account, because I bought over 800 of a particular item, all the same item. I had three UPS trucks in front of my house at the same time one day. It was crazy. But the item has sold through. I'm down to about 100 units left, and they'll be gone soon. But the profit has dropped. I probably won't replenish it because the competition has gotten a lot thicker and the price has tanked, at least for the time being. And it has a suppressed buy box. But at the end of the day, I'm still selling 15 or 20 a day at a profit of about $1.50 a piece. That's not a loss, especially considering I was selling them for like $8 or $9.
Right. So we're back to what Matt Kelly says. As long as you bought it at the right price, you could ride it down to a break even. And that's exactly what you're doing. And that's the whole concept of retail. I mean, if you think about a retail store, right, they buy it generally at a Keystone markup, right? Sometimes cheaper, of course, lots of times cheaper. But then they start selling it at full price. They still haven't paid for the inventory, right? They get terms. So they get it and they start selling it at full price. And then they start to discount it and start to discount it. So the first one they get full price, you know, $100, and the last one they might get $30. But when you combine the amount of money they received, when the bill comes due, they turn to profit, hopefully. That's the whole plan, right?
Exactly.
Or in a lot of cases, they get to return what they didn't sell, but, you know, depending on how strong that relationship is. But in that scenario, they made money, like you said, $8 or $9 on the first one. And even if you end up losing a dollar or two on the second, on the last 50, when you look at it as on a whole over the 800, you overall made money.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things that knowing when to go deep is the problem most of the time. It's hard to tell. The reason I knew I could go deep on these is because I'd been selling them for about 4 months, buying 20, 30, 50 at a time. And then they went on sale. So when they went on sale, I jumped on the sale.
Right. And this is kind of what you were saying about earlier, is that over time you learn and you just know, and then you just follow that. And I think the best predictor of future performance is past performance. Somebody said that once, right? And so that's what you're doing, is you're looking back and you're using Keepa and all the rest of that jazz, I assume, right, to help you make decisions.
Of course, there's so much data out there, it'd be stupid not to take advantage
right,
of it.
Right, so you really are taking very calculated risks, very Absolutely. Calculated. You wish, you know, you had that data to make decisions in the stock market at the level that we are able to make with Amazon, because you could really make a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the information that is out there between Keepa, people talk about how Amazon doesn't give us all the information. They hold stuff back, like the keywords that a product is ranking, the product ranks for, and stuff like that. And it boggles my mind that Amazon gives us access to as much as they do. Mm-hmm. If I were in their shoes, I would probably be a lot more of a walled garden, in my opinion. But the data that they make available, and especially through the third-party services like Keepa and places like that that track these things, give us the ability to look and see what an item has done for years in some cases. And when you have that kind of data in front of you, it's a lot easier to make a decision. And yeah, I'm a data guy. I love data. I'm not a huge spreadsheets guy, but I got sheets put together to help track some of this stuff. And I took the first week of the year off from basically everything Amazon. And I did, then near the end of that week, I started doing some analysis, and I looked at my current inventory and I looked at what inventory had sold well over the past year. And I saw that my highest grossing, fastest turning inventory was in a particular brand. And I've gone after that brand hardcore, and it is largely responsible for where I'm sitting right now with my past 2 months being six-figure months. That's where I'm at right now. And this month is probably going to be a little bit slower because I haven't shopped much in two consecutive weekends because of Memorial Day and the conference, but I'm still on track to have a really great month, and I'm excited.
I think this is all you're getting where you want to be because you have that why. You have a real focus, and it's very exciting. So I think it's really strong, and I'm excited for you. The goal of the podcast is to help people move forward, right? So I'm always looking for ways to just to figure out, how things are going, and when someone hits that struck point, how do you get to that? How do you get past that point? And then how would you advise others to get past that point? So it's a two-part
How do I
question.
get past the being stuck?
Yep.
Is that
And
what you're
then,
asking?
right, I want you to answer how you get past going, being stuck, and then a suggestion for someone else. And maybe it's the same suggestion, but maybe it will work for them and maybe it won't.
Well, when I get stuck, and this kind of goes back to what we've been talking about, if you get stuck on something, if you're stuck on a particular part of your business, try and find some data on that part of your business. Figure out why you're having problems in that area. You may know why, but then finding out what you can do to mitigate those issues is what I would is the way forward. In the military, that's how they taught us. It's like if there's a problem, you identify the problem. Then you figure out what you have to do to fix the problem. You fix the problem and you move on to the next one. That's just kind of my analytical way of looking at things from a technician standpoint from the military, and it served me pretty well in the Amazon realm as well. I hope that helps somebody.
I love it. Love it. All right. So somebody has a follow-up question. Can I put your Facebook contact out there?
Absolutely.
You also have mattcolvin.com, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes,
So they
that's
could
my.
reach, can they contact you on that site?
They can. They absolutely can.
Okay. Man, I wish you nothing but success. What a great story. I love the fact that you've got a why now. And that seems, I mean, it seems to me, this is Steve's little self look. You need something to give you a point of focus, Matt. And now that you've identified a real strong one, you're having incredible success. I mean, there's definitely a correlation there. So keep your eye on the prize. Here's one more thing. I did another interview. It's not out yet, but it's coming out. And what happens is you tend to, not you, we, me, everyone else, tends to drift from their why from time to time. Just go back and remember that again and again to keep you centered. And I think you're going to have incredible success. I wish you nothing but success, man. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to see you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen.
Man, another great episode. I mentioned early on in the beginning of the episode about something my family's getting ready to do. And I just think that, there's some fear and bringing a private label product to market. And there's some bunch of concerns. Well, I think I'm going to be able to help alleviate some of those. So keep listening. It's going to be up in the next 2 weeks. I'll put it everywhere so you'll hear it. Go out and check out ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Follow me on Instagram at ecommercemomentum. I post stuff there that I don't post other places, most of them. So please follow my travels throughout the United States as I continue to just get out there and meet people. Almost 1,000 people already this year I got to meet face to face. I shook every single hand, man, and I just can't wait to meet you. Ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.